This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
I'm just going to sit here laid back to this nice mellow beat, you know, and drop some smooth lyrics.
This week has been a rough one, but it's Tuesday night and it's time to record another Comics in Black and White. This week has really been very embedded in real life for me, but I have read some stuff and I did finally finish reading the last thing that Rob recommended me, and Sparky asked some more questions, so I have some things to talk about on this show. I definitely needed a little more help because it's just one of those weeks where nothing is really lighting up my mind to talk about. Let's just dive right in with what I read this to start with. So to kick the week off, this last Wednesday, two new issues of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out. Now, I haven't read those two issues yet, but a mysterious benefactor has taken it upon themselves to provide me with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, the main comic and the Universe comic. So they both came out this week, issue 82 and 22 respectively of those two series. And the last issue I had read of each one was 75 of the main series and 15 of the Universe series. So I had some catching up to do. So it took me some work to figure out how to go about finding these to read. But find them I did, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was nice to be reading them again. The proper series mostly dealt with the Triceratons coming to Earth, trying to find a home to live on. And the last issue of the six that I read dealt with the Rat King coming back into the Ninja Turtles world. The Universe series, as usual, is kind of supporting it or telling side stories. So there was some stuff about the Triceratons, gave some of their history, some other stuff that I had one issue that really stood out to me of those Universe issues, and that was issue number 18. That was a story about the Ninja Turtles being stuck in a building trying to avoid being seen by people. And I don't want to go too much into that. If you want to hear more of that, listen to episode number 3 of Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the Universe, which won't be out for a little while, but I talk about it on that podcast. I enjoyed the issue quite a bit. It was a very fun issue, and just the way the art was used and the story was told, it was one of those issues. You know, sometimes you read a comic, especially with the Universe series, sometimes I'll read an issue and it's full of good information that builds the story and builds the characters, but I'll just kind of be wanting to get through the issue in a way too. You know, I want to read what's there so I know what's there, but it's not keeping me enthralled to where I wanted to keep going on. But this issue number 18 certainly did that. I enjoyed reading it and didn't want it to end. It was good. It was fun. So that was one standout to me with the Universe series over those few issues. In the proper series, as I said, the first five issues was the Triceraton storyline, but then that sixth issue, the one before the one that is the first physical issue of a comic that I've gotten in some time, is back to the Rat King, and the turtles are going back to another world that we saw in previous issues of Universe. And the one thing that stood out to me the most is that issue, and then the one I have in my possession now that I have yet to read, Dave Wachter, if I said his name correctly, does the art and the cover. And man, I love Dave Wachter's art. He does a fantastic job. I've loved his covers. He's done a series of Ninja Turtle covers in the past, and they've just always been fantastic. I don't know what else he's done. I've got to look into him more now that I see him doing more. And I'm not even sure how many interiors he's done for Ninja Turtles, but what he's done has been fantastic. The first issue of this series, or this arc, I should say, there's a scene in which Splinter and Leonardo separately are going to meditate. And when they meditate, they both have visions of the Rat King. And just the way that he lays it out was absolutely fantastic. So Dave Wachter, you've completely blown me away with your artistic talent. And I always look forward to any book you're on now. Whenever I see his name on an Ninja Turtle book, I'm eager to see what's inside those pages. And his covers, I don't even need to see his name. I know his art style just from what I've seen in the past. So definitely check him out if you haven't checked him out. And if you've been reading Ninja Turtles, pay closer attention to what he's done, because I think it definitely is standout. He's one of the top few Ninja Turtle artists, in my opinion, with the series since IDW relaunched it. If you take Kevin Eastman out of the picture, because obviously his artwork is something special with Ninja Turtles. But aside from him, Dave Wachter, C.P. Wilson III, and Mateus Santaluco, of course, has done a lot of fantastic work. The three of them, I think, are the three most standout artists with Ninja Turtle stuff since IDW has been publishing it. So that's pretty much all the comics I've read. I've had a rough week for reading, haven't read a lot of stuff. There's a little bit of other stuff that I read, trying to finish up some stuff, but none of it really stood out to me enough to talk about. Some of it I read a little bit, decided I didn't like it, and just moved on. But I had a stack of stuff I needed to read to send off to another friend. So I don't know. It's been a weird week for reading. Last week was a lot better. I read a lot of Criminal, read some other stuff. And going forward into this next week, I'll be reading more Criminal and a bunch of Abe Sapien as well. So I look forward to that stuff. Now, moving on to Rob's recommendation for me. I want to pick up the pace on reading his recommendations because there's a lot of stuff that I would like to read from Marvel. A lot of stuff that I've just never dipped into, you know, like Silver Surfer. I've never read Silver Surfer before. And that's one that I've asked for suggestions about from people in the past. There's a lot of Daredevil stuff that I want to read. With Infinity War out, I want to read stuff about Thanos. I mean, there's just so much stuff that I want to read. So I want to get more recommendations from Rob. But in order to get more recommendations, first thing I have to do is get through the recommendation that I've had sitting on my plate for some time. And that was a title called DP7, Displaced Paranormals 7. The writer is Mark Gruenwald. Penciler is Paul Ryan. Inker is Romeo Tangal. Letters is Phil Felix. Colorist is Paul Becton. Editor is Ralph Macchio. So is that edited? By the Karate Kid, right? That's the Karate Kid's name, Ralph Macchio. And then editor-in-chief, of course, is Jim Shooter. That's the era that this is in. So this story is a story about people with powers, paranormal powers. It starts off with a very large, very hairy man being brought into the hospital. And it turns out that he has grown muscles at a ridiculous rate over a short period of time. One of the doctors there discovers that he has some kind of weird specter that can come out of him. So he could sort of have, I don't know, I guess like you'd say part of his conscious leave his body and go and see what's going on and do things. And then can come back and share what was experienced. This comic was published November 10th, 1986. So I was only 3 years old when this came out. And this is part of the New Universe line. There are obviously quite a few other displaced paranormals in this story because it's the DP7. The two main ones are the ones I just mentioned, but there's five other ones. One is a lady who's a housewife and she has an ability to stimulate people, I guess you'd say. And she finds that her powers are beneficial to help the big muscly guy ease his pain when he has new muscles growing in. There's another person that has like a hyper movement ability, super fast. And I honestly don't even really remember what the other ones do. Reading through this, it wasn't my favorite thing. Rob said that he really liked it. It struck him when it came out. I could definitely see where reading this for the first time when it was new would be something interesting. But, I mean, first of all, I'm reading this and it's Marvel, even if it's the New Universe line. And I'm thinking displaced paranormals, like they already kind of have structures in place for people with powers. Like what are those things called? Like why do they need to create a whole new, you know, a whole new structure for why people have powers? It's like already in the Marvel universe, you have, you know, mutants for people that are born with mutated abilities. Then you have all other sorts of superheroes that got their powers in different ways, whether it be through inventiveness like Iron Man or through a serum like Captain America or getting bitten by a spider like Spider-Man, you know, all different kinds of powers. But it seems like, you know, outside of what this is trying to build, you have two ways people get powers. They're born with it or they get it through being exposed to something, whether it be voluntarily, involuntarily, intentionally, whatever. So this is just like, why do they need to create a whole nother thing? Like all these people, you know, they're either mutants or something triggered their power outside of themselves. So, I mean, right off, it just seemed weird to me that they were trying to build a whole nother thing. And reading this, and this obviously takes place 5 or 6 years before Valiant launches, but Valiant's a big chunk of things that weren't mainstream comics that I've read from that era of comics, the 80s and the 90s. And I didn't read any of that stuff when it was coming out because I didn't read comics then. But that's a big chunk of stuff that I've gone back and read. And like this has a feeling similar to what the Harbinger series did. So, I mean, I think you can kind of see Jim Shooter's influence and stuff, perhaps. I mean, this was created by Mark Gruenwald and Paul Ryan, the writer and penciler. But, you know, I wonder how much influence Jim Shooter had in it, or if he himself took influence from this for things that he was integral in creating down the road. I don't know. Ultimately, I mean, there's some of this was kind of interesting. A lot of it was fairly hokey. I don't really know what else was like comparable to this at the time, or you know what the big comics were at the time in the 80s. I mean, I'm around this era and reading Uncanny X-Men, which I've been reading since Giant Size. So I've been reading that since, you know, from release date coming out in like the late 70s, I believe. So I've got to be getting around this time in the issues I've read of that. But yeah, so DP7, it didn't really do it for me, but it's definitely something kind of different. And it's a piece of Marvel that I never knew it even existed. So at the very least, like this was exposure to something totally different. So I thank Rob for drawing my attention to something he enjoyed. It wasn't a bad read, but I mean, I wouldn't pursue reading more of this myself. But if, you've read a lot of Marvel comics, especially if you have Marvel Unlimited and you've never read this and want to tap into something that you've never checked out before, definitely check it out. And if you do, let me know what you think about it. I would definitely like the take of somebody else who has read this that was reading comics back in the 80s to begin with. Like I said, I was 3 years old when this came out. I certainly was not reading comics at that time. Now, the final thing that I have to talk about is I knew I was going to kind of have trouble thinking of stuff to talk about on this episode. It's been a rough week, so my mind hasn't really been free to roam about and think of things that interest me that I wanted to talk about. I haven't been able to read a lot of stuff to talk about. It's just been one of those weeks. About the only other thing that I did this week that was something interesting to put into my mind was I rented Black Panther and watched that. I enjoyed that quite a bit. I don't get to watch a whole lot of movies or TV shows, and I was eagerly awaiting Redbox having Black Panther so I could get it and see it. And I enjoyed it quite a bit. That's one where I've kind of heard mixed reviews. I didn't really hear anybody hated it, but people either really loved it or just thought it was okay from the most part for the feedback I got from it. I thought it was pretty great. It was an entertaining movie, a lot of good action. I watched it with my son. That also made it pretty special. It's the first Marvel movie that I've sat and watched with my son. He's 5 years old, so he's still a little hard for him to keep enthralled by a movie that's aimed to entertain adults as well. But aside from that, this week has been a week focused more on real life than on anything else. So I asked Sparky to give me some questions that he could demand some answers to. So Sparky demands answers. He actually asked me 3 questions just to give me some options of what to choose from. But I think I'm just going to quickly talk about all 3 of these different things. So the first question he asked me, we were talking quite a bit about music when we were recording our other podcast, Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the World. And the first question he asked me is, what are the top 3 artists I listen to when I just want to chill? So I was thinking about this a little bit, and 2 of them are pretty easy. A Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul. I love both of them. They're hugely influential in a lot of the hip hop music I listen to. But both of them is pretty easy to put on one of their albums and just really vibe out to it. Tribe Called Quest, I think a lot of it is that way. I have trouble remembering Tribe Called Quest songs very distinctly different from each other, because when I listen to an album, I tend to listen to it when I want to kind of just vibe out and relax. De La Soul, I have a little more distinction between songs than I do with Tribe Called Quest. In Tribe Called Quest, I usually just, like, if you tell me a song, I know what you're talking about. But if I think of a song, I can't always think of what the name of that song is, because it's kind of fitting into the bigger picture. But I definitely like both of them a lot. And I was trying to think of something else that might be a little bit different, not just kind of keep going down the same path. And another band that I really like to listen to when I want to listen to something that's just enjoyable is Eels. Mark Oliver Everett, and he's worked with different musicians over the years in the band Eels. But that's a band that I was introduced to by my wife. She showed me a song that I still kind of think of as our song. It really represents how we felt when we started dating. The song's called Fresh Feeling. But Eels has a lot of different music, or a lot of albums, I should say. And each album has a little bit of a different feel, but just the songwriting is great on it. It's kind of different than, you know, most mainstream music, that kind of indie rock music like it. And you've probably heard a bunch of Eels songs. If, you know, they've had songs on soundtracks and, but they're one of those bands that even though you've probably been exposed to their music, you may not realize it unless for, you know, for some particular reason you've really focused on delving into the Eels. But I really enjoy them. I haven't enjoyed his last couple albums as much. Up to the album Blinking Lights and Other Revelations, I've really enjoyed all of the albums. After that, it's a little bit more hit and miss. There's some stuff that I like after that, but I just haven't been able to quite get into it the same way. But there's a wide enough variety in the songs and kind of what drives the songs that they can also kind of suit different moods of how I might want to vibe out or chill out. But a lot of the songs kind of can kind of hit me in an emotional way, but not in a negative way. I was actually talking about this on mine and Sparky's other podcast, but a lot of times when people are sad or down or something like that, they listen to music that is in that vein, sad music or depressing music, but all that does is make you feel worse, more sad, more depressed. But some music, when you listen to it, it can kind of suit that mood and allow you to mentally let go of your specific things that you're dealing with, but also kind of can set your mind on a better track to where you get the mental relaxation, the little bit of numbness that lets you let go. But then when you pull it back together and have to focus on life again, you actually feel a little bit better when you come out of it. And that's kind of how I feel about the Eels. More of their music, even though some of the songs that he has are real, real sad songs, but I still feel like there's a hint of brightness, a hint of positivity, of hopefulness. That's the right word. A hint of hopefulness, even with some of the saddest stuff that he has. I've seen the Eels perform live once. I went with my wife on Valentine's Day a number of years ago now, and it was a very interesting performance because it was Mark Oliver Everett, and it started with them showing a documentary about his dad, who is a rocket scientist who founded the theory of parallel universe. And the documentary was about his dad and everything, and it's a very sad story hearing about. It's just crazy to think like what his dad had done and like how, you know, monumental that is in our culture now. You know, at the very least, it's very influential on science fiction and stuff like that. But to hear about the way his relationship was with his dad and other details like that, and to hear about other stuff that like you heard in his music, but until you just flat out heard the story, like you didn't quite get it the same way, was something very different. And then when he was performing, he would kind of tell stories, then he'd play songs, he'd play by himself sometime, then he had another artist come out, a musician come out and play with him, and they would switch off on different instruments. It was a heck of a show. It's something I'll never forget. So those are some artists I listen to when I want to chill out. The next question was, what are the top three artists I listen to when I'm having a bad week? Usually when I'm having a bad week, that means that it's just a frustrating week. So might be angry, might just be worn out, might just be irritable, whatever. But I think with a bad week, it's not necessarily like a week where I'm feeling like down or depressed or something like that. I'm thinking more like, I got to get some tension and anger out, or, you know, whatever. So when I'm having a week like that, usually I want to listen to music that is more upbeat, maybe a little aggressive. And I usually have some certain go-tos that I like. One thing that I like, and you can look at this a couple different ways. You can look at it as Cypress Hill, or you can look at it as Rage Against the Machine, or a little bit of both. But there's actually Rage Against the Machine covers a Cypress Hill song, How I Could Just Kill a Man. That's a song I like to listen to if I'm really like want to get pumped up. It's a good workout song for me too. Like if I want to go and like really push it on, you know, on cardio or something like that, that song will get me pumped up. But I like the Rage Against the Machine cover on the album Renegades of Funk that they cover that on. They actually have bonus tracks where they're performing it live, but it's with Cypress Hill, and that's something kind of different. And then I also like to just listen to the Cypress Hill version of the song. But that type of music, you know, typically when I need to like work out some energy, it's going to be rap. And Cypress Hill is just kind of a good one. And, you know, obviously I don't want to go kill anybody, but, you know, listening to music that's kind of aggressive like that can, you know, really get that aggressiveness out of you when you need to. Another artist I'll listen to sometimes when I'm having a bad week like that and have that aggression, like to stray away from rap a little bit, is Tom Waits. You know, a lot of his stuff will be very, very bluesy and softer and mellow like that. But some of his stuff gets that really grating, raspy. If anybody's seen The Punisher, the TV show, the Netflix series, I guess I should say, the first episode has a song, Hell Broke Loose. And they use that song on the scene when he's beating those guys to death. And it suits it really well. Really aggressive song, but in a different way than you know what I would get from listening to some aggressive hip hop. If I'm gonna pick an album to just put on, usually I will listen to Wu-Tang Clan, Enter the 36 Chambers. And that's an interesting album for me. I saw Wu-Tang Clan one time live, and it's not somebody that I would have even thought to choose to go to live, but a friend of mine from back in California, who you may have heard me record a podcast about hip hop with, that we published under the Nerdy Legion feed, a good year and a half or so ago. And I'm actually going to have him on this podcast. I was aiming to have him on last week, but it fell through at the last minute because he had, technical problems. But he got me to go to see, Rock the Bells that had the Wu-Tang Clan headlining. And it was the last time they all performed together before Old Dirty Bastard died. So it's pretty cool being able to say that I saw that. But I had never listened to Wu-Tang Clan when he invited me to the show. So I got my first Wu-Tang album, 36 Chambers. And that's a really interesting album. At that time, I was really heavily listening to underground hip-hop, but I wasn't really listening to mainstream stuff. And if I, like, anything I was listening to that was close to mainstream was like Golden Age 90s stuff or old school stuff, but like I wasn't listening to anything as mainstream as Wu-Tang Clan. But 36 Chambers like really, really has an indie feel to it. The production is very different and very creative. Obviously what they were rapping about was something like nothing I had ever listened to. So it was very different, but like part of it resonated with the stuff that I like, even if part of it was something that was just totally foreign to me. But that's an album that is just, it's different than pretty much anything else I listen to, but I've listened to it enough that like when you just need some release, usually you want to go to something that you're familiar with. And I am very familiar with that album because I've listened to that one album a ton. I've listened to some other Wu-Tang stuff, like their individual stuff. But nothing like I've listened to that one album. So those are some of my go-to things when I'm having a bad week and need to get that, just like get that tension out of me release. The last question he read me is, hypothetically, there's nothing new to read. So I want to read something, but there's nothing new for me to read. So I have to read something I've already read before. So it's going to be on the top of my pile of things to reread. And I don't really often reread stuff. Like I usually read things once, and that's going to suit me for quite a long time. Just the way my mind works, the way I process stuff, I don't really need to go back to it. An example of that, like my wife will want to show me something, like a picture of something that she wants to tell me about. I can take the slightest little glance at it, and that's all I need. I have it in my head then, but she'll get irritated because she thinks I'm not paying attention, but I am paying attention. That was all I needed to get it in my mind, and now I'm processing it in my mind. I don't need to look at what she's trying to show me anymore. That's kind of how I am with reading stuff too. Reading, I think, is very different than, when you think of the three forms of entertainment we have that are art forms. You have music, you have video, whether it be movies or TV or whatever. And then you have reading, whether it be just, you know, prose or comic books. You know, even though comic books have a visual, like it's still reading. So it's still kind of fits in that same category for me. Music is the one of those things that you reabsorb the same thing over and over and over. You know, I could sit if a song is something that I'm really enjoying or that really suits how I feel or whatever, like you could listen to the same song for an hour straight, which would be quite a few repetitive listens of that song. Movies or TV, you're going to ingest those a little less repetitively, but it's totally possible to watch a movie or a TV show over and over. I think the reason that both of those things are more likely to be consumed repetitively is that you can consume them passively. So you can pay a lot of attention to music, you can pay a lot of attention to a movie or a TV show, but you can also just put it on and watch it. It allows you to kind of let go and release, and because you've absorbed it before, like, you can enjoy it in a different way and continue to enjoy it. And sometimes you can pay even more attention and get more stuff out of it. But when you're reading, whether it's comic books or novels or, you know, anything of the sort, you're much more active. Like, you have to actively be looking at it, reading the words, and absorbing that into your mind. If you've ever read and found your mind wandering, you can read a few pages and then realize you didn't absorb anything that you just read, because you have to be active, you have to be engaging with it. You can't passively read something. The closest thing you could do that would be like flipping through a comic book and looking at the art, but you know, that's not the same thing. So it's not real often that I read something again. But there are a few things that I am more apt to read again. The first one, I was trying to think of with comics, like what things I could actually see myself reading repetitively. And I think one of the biggest standout ones would be Usagi Yojimbo, because it's easy to approach. The art is nice and crisp and clear. Compared to like Lone Wolf and Cub, where the art's great in Lone Wolf and Cub, but you know, a lot of times the way the action stuff is depicted, it's not the clearest thing. So like if you're trying to be a little more mindless reading it, like you can't, you'll kind of miss what's going on if you're going through it too quickly. Whereas with Usagi, it's nice and crisp, so it's easier to not lose it that way. It also is pretty clear in what the story is trying to portray. Like there's a lot of lessons in Usagi, a lot of morals, and it's not like they're so subtle that you don't get what they're trying to show you. And it also follows many other things in that genre, samurai genre. So if you've seen Kurosawa movies, or if you've read Lone Wolf and Cub, or you know, Zatoichi, or you know, different things like that. Stan Sakai will, parody is not the right word. What's the word for it? He'll do homages to those stories, or sometimes he'll straight up retell those kinds of stories. So it's kind of cool because you'll be reading it and you love these other things. And so it's kind of like getting a twofer. You know, you're reading Usagi, but, you know, you're also reading a story from a Kurosawa movie. So it makes you think of that movie that you saw that you really liked. So you get like double the good feeling out of it. And I haven't reread Usagi yet, but I've actually been desiring. I'm only about halfway through the run of the omnibuses that are out at this point so far, but I'm already kind of craving going back to the beginning and reading it from the beginning again too, because now that I've read it so much, I'm very familiar with the characters and stuff like that. So like going through it again will be a very different experience. So that's one where I'm looking forward to the opportunity for rereading it, and that will definitely come someday. Now, another book that I've read several times, and that's a rare occurrence for me, that would definitely be at the top of my reread pile, is 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. That's my favorite book, and there's two reasons that it's my favorite book. One is because the characters in it are really well fleshed out. It's a very character-driven story, so you get feelings for these characters, you know, whether it be good or bad or whatever. So like the characters matter. And then on top of that, the stories that it's telling you, it's like it's telling you a multitude of stories and telling you one greater, bigger story. It's across generations of families in this town. So it's heavily character-driven, but it's heavily story-driven. It's a fantastic book. I haven't actually read anything else by Marquez, which is surprising, because especially the first time I read this book was in a time in my life when I was reading very, very heavily. I was reading through more than a novel a week, and yet I still hadn't moved on to another one. I think that I loved this book so much that I wasn't quite ready to try something else of his, because I was pretty sure that that book was going to be the pinnacle of my experience with Marquez. So those are two of the three things that would be at the top of my to read pile if I was rereading thing. And I was trying to think of what the third thing would be, because it would be easy to cop out and say something that I really like Ninja Turtles. But I was trying to think of something that realistically I could envision just absorbing again and again. And I think that what I would choose for my third thing is Matt Fraction and David Aja's run on Hawkeye. And of course, there was a little bit of other artists thrown in there too. But that run on Hawkeye, there were just so many different things to love about it. The art was really great. They did some creative things, like with the pizza dog issue. They had the issue where Matt was, where Clint was temporarily deaf. So they had to tell the story in a different way. Obviously Clint Barton is the main character of the story, but Kate Bishop as the other Hawkeye, she's a character that just really resonated with me in that. Not necessarily that I have anything in common with her, but she's just a character that I really liked in that story. So there were just so many things about that run that I really love. And I think that ultimately what would make it something I would go back to is that some of the characters in that are ones that, you know, like I cared about their experience in the story. You know, it's like if you're watching a movie and you care about a character and something bad happens to them, you get upset. You know, it's the same thing reading a comic book like that. You know, we get really used, I think, sometimes to reading like superhero comics where you're just used to stuff happening. But the way that run is presented, you know, it's not just like, that's a superhero, they're gonna be killed. But then no, they weren't really killed. This is really what happened. You know, just like it feels a lot more like real people. Because neither of the Hawkeyes have superpowers. They're just very skilled. So, like, they're both susceptible to injury and death. But I really loved that run of comics. And it's something I've reread it some. But I could definitely see myself reading that over and over if I had nothing new to read ever again. So there's a whole bunch of answers for you, Sparky. There's a whole bunch of podcasts for you people. I'm actually surprised how long I recorded. Getting a lot of good questions helps that. Gives me stuff to ramble on about. Thank you, Rob, for your recommendation. I look forward to the next one. Thank you, Sparky, for your questions. I look forward to many more. Thank you all for listening. I hope your week has been better than mine, and I hope I have more to talk to you about in the next.
Someone else will take your title, namely me, because I'm homicidal. That means murder. You sound like the herder, another MC. They try to get with me, I'll just break them and make them and rake them and take them and mold them and make them hold up the peace sign. Ashalama, wait. Why wait?